ISC is presented to you by Dark Hawk Nutrition. Dark Hawk Nutrition is the next evolution in sports supplements. Their pre-workout, protein, creatine, and other products are produced in FDA-approved facilities, third-party tested for quality, and are guaranteed clean. Use code IMPACT for 15% off of your entire selection at darkhawknutrition.com. That is code IMPACT for 15% off of your entire order at darkhawknutrition.com. What up, what up, what up? Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the sixth episode of the Backwards K Baseball Podcast. And as always, I am Chris Asbrock, and I'm your host, and I'm joined each and every week by my partner in crime here, Scott Kaiser. Scott, my man, how you doing, buddy?
Happy Jackie Robinson Day!
Yes, happy Jackie Robinson Day. Yes.
Doing all right, 15th. My man. Glad to be back after our little the solar eclipsed the show for a week. So
it did.
Good to be back. Good to be talking some baseball. Happy to be here, my man. How
it
are
feels
you?
Great, man. Feels great. I couldn't be any happier right now. But us missing last week means that we just have more to pack into this show this week.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, do you want to get it going? Let's get started now. Hot damn.
Let's go. Let's lead things off, my man. Cool.
Let's do it. All right, well, this has been a rough season, to say the least, for pitchers. We've got guys, Eury Pérez and Shane Bieber, two of the biggest so far that went out last week. I think it was last week. Yeah, I got to get my week straight since we missed the show. But they're the two latest to go down with Tommy John, and they're going to end up missing the season. Another huge note is, unfortunately for Scott, is Spencer Strider of the Atlanta Braves. He ended up with the UCL sprain, and they did the brace procedure, and he's going to miss the rest of the 2024 season as well. So three top-tier pitchers that are they're going to be down for the count for 2024, and that sucks because, I mean, each and every year you look for really good pitching and top pitching performances, and unfortunately we're seeing three of those guys that have delivered so far are going to be, you know, on the shelf for the rest of 2024. Scott, I mean, what are your thoughts on what we've seen so far, and like what can you attribute it to, if it, I mean, because it's so murky, it seems like.
I wish I had an answer for you, but I think that's like the $1 billion question for both players, the league, fans, everybody. As it's not just when you look at the names you mentioned, the Shane Biebers, the Spencer Striders, whatnot. We've had guys that haven't had surgery yet and have gone down. Framber Valdez is on the IR with a bum elbow. You've got Nick Pivetta on the IL with a bum elbow. Who was it the other day that was pitching just fine for the Dodgers? Bobby Miller.
Yeah, Bobby Miller. Yeah.
On that injury list with the shoulder injury. So, you know, it sucks because we come into this year and we're already down a handful of aces. You know, Shane McClanahan had Tommy John last year. Alcantara had Tommy John last year. So we already had guys coming into this year, big names, top of the sport, top, you know, aces type things. And now we're losing the guys coming into the season with Bradish and the names that we've mentioned so far, and there's just going to be more. It's unfortunate, but this is the time of the year that you see arm injuries, and it just so happens to be that the well-known names are the ones that stick out the most at the top of the list, and it's happened in short order. I don't know if there's anything that baseball can necessarily do about it. I've heard people talk about changing the rules or limiting how many pitchers you can have on the roster so that it makes the manager have to decide to keep guys in longer and they'll throw shorter and all these, there's all a million different remedies, but nobody really knows the core reason for it. So I don't think we have the answers. We're just going to have to soldier on and watch baseball with the guys that are left. It's unfortunate when you're talking about the top names being gone, but this happens every year. You know, people have made it into a bigger deal seemingly this year than but I've seen charts and I've seen the numbers, and right now the numbers are the same sack up in any other year. It just so happens that the names are bigger than usual, and that's unfortunate for everybody involved.
Oh, 1,000%. And like you said, it gets magnified when it is just the bigger names. And this is just one of those years that, unfortunately, it is what it is. And I think
Rex wants to know, do we think that the pitch clock and the speed of the game with the last year of them making the rules, if that has anything to do with it? What do you think that?
I don't think so.
No.
I really don't. And because it seems like pitchers they've gotten to a solid rhythm with it. I think it's an easy fallback to complain upon, but pitchers, I mean, it hasn't changed anything really. I mean, again, I'm not a professional pitcher by any means, but I haven't heard anything outside of what people have said, you know, the talking heads either online or anything like that, and mentioning something, you know, along those lines. But to me, I don't think that's it. We're at a point now where we're just seeing dudes just pump it faster. That's just I think that could be a lot of it. I mean, the velocity, the uptick in velocity is absolutely incredible. And some of the break on the pitches is incredible as well. So that's, you know, it's just more taxing on these guys' arms. Maybe it is the overuse. You know, these guys are continuously working, you know, giving their arms just, you know, a short rest over the offseason, and then they're back pumping it again. I mean, obviously not, you know, you're not jumping in with both feet, you know, a couple weeks after the season ends, but, you know, you're obviously slowly starting to work into it. But still, I think it's just, you know, or do we look at youth, you know, how pitchers are starting so early, and maybe it's just to the point where it's just, you know, you're taking all that out of your arm because your arm only has so much, and it's, you know, maybe you're just using a lot of it early on, and then it finally breaks as you get older. I don't know. It's a tough thing to determine and a tough thing to figure out.
But I wish there was a more concrete answer. I wish there was something that we could pinpoint, but I think it's a combination of a lot of different factors. You said youth baseball, kids are playing year round now. They're throwing more than ever. They're traveling all over the country playing baseball year round. That doesn't help. The spin rates, guys. Mike chimed in the comment section and mentioned that he doesn't think it's the pitch clock and speed of the game, but more insane velocity and spin rate that these guys have. I think the spin rate, the velocity, the throwing year round, the idea that the only way that you're going to make it in the bigs is if you throw harder and you've got the highest spin rates possible. And then, you know, they took away the sticky stuff and they took away any of the tackiness that they had there, which means guys have to figure something else out to get the same spin rates while not having the advantage of having the sticky stuff. I think that has something to do with it. Yes. I think it's one of those things where all of these miniature factors kind of add up some way heavier than others. And there's nothing that I don't know that there's anything that can necessarily be done. The human body isn't really designed to throw baseballs. They're definitely not designed to throw baseballs at 95 plus mile an hour for, you know, 100 some pitches on any given day. There's not a shortage of players out there. So as long as guys keep wanting to be in the big leagues, wanting to play at the highest level, whether it be college or high school or whatever it may be, they're going to throw as hard as they can to try to get that rotation spot. They're going to try as hard as they can to make sure they stay on the team. And there's nothing really that baseball or the major leagues can do to necessarily regulate it. I don't think it has anything to do with the pitch clock, but there's not enough data on it. Maybe the pitch clock isn't helping either, but I don't think it's the sole cause, and I don't think it's the reason why it's happening any more frequent than it ever has, because they've been using this at the minor league level for what, 4 or 5 years now, and guys weren't getting hurt any more than they, you know, at a rate any higher than they have been. But you can't deny the fact that over the past 15 to 20 years, the injuries have increased tenfold. I mean, whereas it, when we were growing up, guys would have Tommy John, it meant the end of their career. Well, then, you know, about 20 years ago, guys have Tommy John, and it might not mean the end of their career, but they might not be the same. They'd have to go to the bullpen or change something about it. Now it's not unusual to see a guy have Tommy John before they even make it to the bigs. And you're, in Spencer Strider's case, you're seeing him have Tommy John. And well, and he's doing the brace procedure, which is a modified version of Tommy John. But either way, having surgery on his pitching elbow for the second time, and he's only been in the league for two full seasons. So, I mean, I don't know what anybody could necessarily do. You're not going to be able to tell guys to throw with less effort or, you know, dial it back. So it's just a problem that baseball is going to have to deal with, much like, you know, CTE is a problem that football has to deal with.
You know what? You brought up a really good point with the tacky stuff. I think that is a huge – I really didn't think about it until you said it. I think that is a lot, like you said, when you, because you're now forcing pitchers to have to adjust things and get that same spin rate without the tacky stuff on there. Why not do what Japan does, the MPB? They've got they have pre-tacked balls.
Yes.
I mean, why not go with something along those lines? It's because it's all monitored by Major League Baseball. You know, I think maybe that's a good solid solution. I don't know. Again, it's crazy what we have seen. Then you got guys like TJ Antone, who dude's going to be third time Tommy John. I mean, that sucks. Like that. I mean,
that's unheard of too.
Yeah. That's a damn shame for the guy. And it's like, I mean, he wants to, he's talking about coming back afterwards. He's going to rehab, you know, and I'm like, dude, man, three times that ain't it, man. That ain't it. Like, I just, it really does suck to see. It's a shame. Like we said, it's more magnified now because of the names that, you know, that we're seeing go down this year, but it is a common occurrence. And it's been like that the last couple of years, just simply because of, there's many different factors that have gone into it. So,
yeah. And you mentioned something about baseball and major leagues bringing in something with the tact on the ball. I know that they've been developing something. They're trying to figure something out because I guess they don't like how sticky the baseball is in the Japan leagues and whatnot. So they're trying to develop their own amount of tack on the ball. And I think that would go a little bit of ways to help fix some of these things because, you know, they're talking about raising the mound or doing things like that. And I'm like, well, why are we talking about raising the mound when we've done that before? We raise the mound, we lower the mound whenever there's too much offense or not enough offense. And I'm waiting for them to, you know, complain. They took out the sticky stuff because they thought people wanted more offense. And this is just like legislating defense out of, you know, football. They think that everybody wants to see offense, but there's got to be a middle ground. Nobody wants to see 11 to 12 games in Major League Baseball. That's not good baseball. And while it may be fun when you're at the game or on occasion, it's just not something that baseball needs to get in bed with every single time and every single game. So I think that they do need to figure out something with the ball because, you know, they're not having as many injuries over in Japan. It's not as frequent. And of course, guys aren't necessarily throwing as hard. They have six-man rotations over there. They seem to rest a little bit more. Again, I don't know what the answer is because it doesn't. You've seen, you know, Shohei up over there in Anaheim before he went to the Dodgers. They were on a six-man rotation like he was used to in Japan. Didn't matter. Still ended up having to add him.
I was going to say those guys they get hurt when they come back over here.
Right, so, and he's just, you know, like Spencer Strider, where he's got he had the brace procedure that it was his second Tommy John or elbow surgery. So I don't know that there's a one way, you know, package deal to type thing to fix it, but there's got to be something done and adjustments made so that we're not seeing stars of the game and that. I mean, I don't want to see anybody hurt, but when the top level guys are falling at the rate that they're falling, then they've got to do something. And again, I think that baseball and the Players Association needs to come together to figure something out because they're both pointing fingers and it's not getting anywhere with solving the problem.
I was just going to say the problem is baseball, they're too quick to change shit. Like any hint of, I don't want to say adversity or anything like that. They're so quick to, you know, to jump on it and change it. That's not necessarily, I mean, it's obviously not a good thing every single time. Why not sit down with a bunch of pitchers and discuss it and figure it out? What, like, hey, so-and-so, like, what do you like? You know, Scherzer, okay, what works best for you? Okay, Bobby Miller, what works best for you? Hunter Green, what do you like? You know, just survey all these guys. Sit down and talk to them. Figure it out and go from there. It's they make it too difficult, and that's what's really frustrating about it is, like I said, they're so quick to change things when sometimes it's just as easy as just, you know, sitting down and figuring out and working together. Like you said, work together, not difficult. Apparently, you know, we're speaking in tongues here, because that's not what Major League Baseball does, and it's frustrating as hell, because, again, the game is better off when they all work together instead of pointing fingers. And that's what has to happen here, because, you know, it's only going to be positive, plain and simple. It's only going to be positive. And that's what these guys got to do.
Both sides have a vested interest in figuring it out, because guys are on the field to play, they're playing at the highest level. There's more eyeballs. There's more butts in the seats. That makes monies for the owners. And then the players, if they're actually on the field, that's the only way they can earn money. And so, Bingo. You know, they want to stay healthy just as badly as the owners want them to be healthy and out there performing for their team. So I don't know what has to be done, but baseball's got to figure out something, because it's gotten to a point where it's out of hand, and I don't know what they can do, but somebody smarter than me needs to figure that out.
Damn right. I'm right there with you, my man. Well, let's go to some positivity here. We got some young dudes that were called up, and they have been absolutely performing. And again, that is great for the game. Jackson Holliday, the game's top prospect, got his major league call up last week.
Finally. Did struggle.
Yeah, no kidding. Finally. He did struggle before getting his first major league hit the other day. I mean, it was like you said, Scott, it's about time, but we've got Mariners have called up their top prospect, Jonathan Clase. He's coming up, and he's in the lineup tonight against the Cincinnati Reds. So that's one. You've got Michael Busch with the Cubs. He's performing. Colton Cowser, another stud with the Orioles. I mean, the young talent that's in this game right now it's ridiculous. And these guys are performing, which is making it even better to see. I mean, Colton Cowser, you know, his week, he batted .435, four home runs, and 12 RBIs. I mean, really? And Michael Busch, home runs in four straight games for the Cubs. Like, come on. This is unbelievable what these guys are doing. Again, we are so lucky as baseball fans to see the young talent in this league right now. I mean, it's awesome. It is so great. Because, you know, Jackson Holliday is going to – he's going to figure it out. A lot of people were shitting on the Orioles for it and shitting on him for it, but dude's going to figure it out. He's a stud ball player, plain and simple. But, again, take a deep breath, folks. These dudes, they're going to get it figured out. And the ones that already have, oh, man, hang on for it. It's going to be a good ride.
Yeah, no, and we took the week off, so there were some things that we happened to miss in there. But the young kids playing, getting the playing time and getting the chance to shine in the last week was really fun to watch. Michael Busch, you know, sat there on the Dodgers forever. They didn't want to trade him. He's a little bit older when you're talking about guys that are making a name for themselves at the age of 26. when you've got Jackson Holliday getting called up to the majors at age 20. But it's nice to see guys that are finally getting a chance that have shown in the major or in the minor leagues what they can do. They have this pedigree in the minor leagues. And when you look at a Cowser and you're talking about Holliday, they got that log jam there in Baltimore. These guys don't even have a place to play. They have so many guys that if they were to trade them, I'd say more than half of them would be starting for big league clubs right now. But that's how much talent the Orioles have amassed over the past few years. They've set themselves up in a really good spot. Jackson Holliday, while he may have started out slow, is going to be one of the best the game has seen. It's short in short order compared to, you know, some of these other guys who maybe take a little bit longer. It's just a really fun time to be a baseball fan, and especially if you're into watching the next wave of talent come in and take over, you know, the game, to where when we're talking about guys missing because of injury, at least there's that next wave that's coming behind them, to where the stars of tomorrow are getting shown. Right, you know, right now at the beginning of the year when everything's so fresh.
And the best part is, you know, we had talked about it, well, last episode, the college game as well. The guys that are set to come up in this coming June's draft, I mean, Jesus, it's unbelievable. I mean, you got Charlie Condon, leads the country in home runs for Georgia. I've mentioned Jack Caglione, two-way player. Nick Kurtz is hitting absolute bombs for Wake Forest. That's the next wave that's not in the minors right now. I mean, again, you've got some dudes in the minors that are set to come up. They're just, you know, they're waiting for their opportunity. And you got guys in college that are going to be drafted here in just a couple months, and they're going to be knocking on that door. And it's incredible, like I said, to be a baseball fan right now with what we've seen. I got a notification. Jackson Churio, I want to say, just hit a two-run home run for Milwaukee. I mean,
there's another one of the young stars that's coming up.
It is. I keep saying it. I keep repeating myself, but it is. It's incredible.
Well, and then we talked about Wyatt Langford on the last show, and he has yet to hit a home run, but he's been handling himself amazingly at the plate. He's looked like a seasoned pro back there, and everything's going great for him so far outside of the home run department. So when you have all these guys coming up, baseball's in a great place. We just got to keep them healthy. We got to make sure we promote them. We got to make sure we get them out there so that these names aren't ones that only you and I know. These become household names, or at least names that the casual fan, you know, gets to know. So,
and along those lines, Gunnar Henderson just hit a home run for the Orioles. That just popped up.
I mean, right on cue.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We're on a roll here with this. But again, it's a team like the Orioles that, like you said, there's such a logjam in that organization. The amount of moves that they can make to improve that team, to get a top-line starter. And they already did that by getting Corbin Burns. But good Lord, they could still deal from their, you know, from their farm team, or farm system, I should say, and still get more. Because you got guys – I mean, Heston Kjerstad is still waiting his turn. That's another outfielder that, I mean, good Lord, good luck trying to break that lineup. And then he's sitting there absolutely mashing. It's an embarrassment of riches for some of these teams, but it's also an embarrassment of riches for baseball fans that literally each and every night we tune in and we get to see, you know, stars, you know, like an Ellie De La Cruz, for example, you know, Spencer Steer here in Cincinnati, these guys here locally. But then you've got, you know, for example, Scott, for you, I mean, you've got you got stud pitchers that are set to come up. I mean, it's Hurston Waldrop is, I'm telling you right now, when you guys drafted him, I was like, oh boy. I said, I immediately texted you. I remember that when they made that pick, and I was like, there's a dude you guys got. And he's waiting to come up. It's just, there's so much talent that, you know, we're still waiting to see. Paul Skeens, who has been, if you followed him down in AAA in Indianapolis, you know, for the Pirates, dude's flat dealing down there. That was expected. And it's just a matter of time before he gets the call up for the Pirates.
It's going to say he should be any day now.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, we'll see him, I would say, probably, I'm going to say in the
next 3 weeks. By mid-May at the latest, I would assume that he's up. Assuming that the Pirates don't just fall flat on their face and continue to play as well as they have to start the season, I think that they have to add him to the rotation to make sure that they keep that excitement and they keep the wins going.
Oh yeah. It's again, there's, you know, there's a really solid chance we're going to be seeing him, like you said, in a couple weeks. And that, I mean, what more can you ask for?
Awesome. I mean, outside of Oakland, we've talked all this time about how big, and we know Oakland is, we're going to talk a little bit more about Oakland later in the show. They're a joke of a franchise right now, but they still have major league players on their team, and they have one of the most exciting players in the game right now. He happens to be a closer. Now, that's mostly because his arm couldn't hold up. We talk about arm injuries. Nobody's more familiar with arm injuries than Mason Miller of the Oakland A's. He's a guy who can throw 104 miles an hour, which he's done multiple times this season in multiple appearances, but his arm just will not hold up. So much so that he was a starter before this year. He only pitched, I think, a handful of innings last year before it needing to go down, elbow injury. Came back late in the season, didn't pitch very much, and they shut him down. They decided that this year he was going to be a closer, and he has been lights out in the role. Just appointment television. I mean, when he's on, I'm getting messages from people who barely watch baseball asking me, like, have you seen Mason Miller pitch? Which I've seen him. I've tuned in myself just to see him pitch. He was pitching last week against the
Texas
Royals. Well, this was when they were in Kansas. They were playing against Kansas City. And struck out the side, hit 104 multiple times, and it was just electric. One of the most exciting players in the game. Again, just got to keep him healthy. But he's another name that you pile onto this list and say that baseball is in such a good spot with their young talent that there's never been a better time to be a baseball fan, honestly.
Exactly. And Mason Miller went to Waynesburg University. He played there for 4 years and then as a fifth-year grad student went to Gardner-Webb. I mean, again, if you're a ball player,
they will find you.
Exactly. You're going to be found. And that's, you know, it doesn't matter. And right now, it seems like back when I was, you know, in high school and everything like that, looking to play in college, it was one of those things to where it was like the difference between D1 players and even D3 and everything like that was there's such a jump. Now there's not. And that's the crazy part about it because, again, Mason Miller, he's now known as the most electric closer in the game. Again, at Waynesburg University for 4 years and then to Gardner-Webb as a fifth-year grad student, was drafted in the third round of the 2021 draft by the A's. And look at that. And now, again, because of injury, now Mark Kotze, as you know, as the A's manager, was like, now we're going to hold off. We're going to keep this the best way to kind of salvage his arm, like you had said, Scott. Put him back to manage innings and everything like that, manage his arm, put him in there. And this dude he's nasty. I mean, again, it's appointment television.
He reminds me of rookie year Craig Kimbrell. That's the closest comparison that I've seen. I mean, when Craig Kimbrell came onto the scene for the Braves his rookie year, again, lights out, striking out the side, pumping in fast. Now, he wasn't quite hitting 100. He was more in the 99 region, which, you know, sounds slow these days. But same thing T-ball. Where it's just like – same thing where he comes in just throwing gas, just blowing it by people, striking out the side. You know, guys have no chance. And again, just a fun thing to watch. So I hope that Mason Miller's arm holds up. I hope that we're afforded seeing him all season. And it's something for the A's fans, if there's any left, maybe, to watch and at least get excited about. Again, have to be in a position to win the game because him being closer, they tend not to bring him in. Although they did give him some work last week when he hadn't been in a few days. Got to keep him fresh still when he hasn't pitched in 4 or 5 days. But for the most part, the only time we get to see Mason Miller means that it's probably going to be an A's victory, which, again, I suppose is good for A's fans.
Well, it's great. I mean, that's it. Rephrase that. That's the third place Oakland Athletics.
The third place Oakland
third Athletics. Third place that's Oakland right. Athletics.
This is the time of year when we're paying much more attention to standings and stuff like that because they look a little bit different than they might throughout the rest of the season.
Hey, it's the A's just, watch right now.
Right. The A's winning a series this weekend, just blowing everybody's mind. Of course,
exactly.
It was against the Nationals, so somebody had to win the series, I suppose.
That's the fourth place Nationals.
Well,
get that right.
There you go.
Only half a game worse than the A's. So
right. I mean, speaking of teams doing well, the Guardians, Rex bringing up that the Guardians are playing well right now. I think I saw today that they won their 10th game of the season. Are they like 10-2 right now?
They're 11-5 right now.
11-5.
11-5.
The Guardians have quietly done that because I know all the talk was on, you know, Tito retiring and the changing of the guard there at manager. And, you know, the Shane Bieber injury kind of threw everything off. And I think everybody kind of just has ignored them after that, including myself. I know, they had that injury and I thought, well, you know, that's the one ace that they have. I know they've got a decent, a decent all-star and Jose Ramirez, but not much else there to speak of offensively. So when you're talking about the Guardians as a team on the whole, not a lot of star power, but they find ways to get it done. And here they are, 11-5 early on, but got to like what you're seeing if you're a Guardians fan, despite the fact that they've lost Bieber for the season.
You know what? Let's get into that here in just a minute. But first, you had talked about retirements. We just got the news today. John Sterling, the legendary Yankees and radio announcer, is announcing his retirement effective immediately. He's 64 years in the booth as the Yankees radio announcer. I mean, simply incredible. Hell of a career. I'm going to be honest with you. I can't stand him. I can't. John Sterling makes me want to – I'm going to be classy here. I want to punch myself in the face. We'll just go with that. I can't. I think he's horrible. I've never liked him. I know Yankees fans love him. Good on you. But in all fairness, in all seriousness, a hell of a career for John Sterling. Hope everything is right, you know, and good for him medically. Obviously, that's first and foremost, most important there on that. But it came out today effectively that he's effective immediately. He's gonna be done. He loves calling the games, but the travel's getting to him. And I totally get it. At that age, it definitely takes a toll on you. But John Sterling, legendary Yankees announcer, he's calling it quits.
Hence why no love lost, man.
I can't stand it.
I would love to care more, and look, I respect the career, I respect what he's done for the organization and the fans who love him, but in all honesty, he's been one of the most annoying voices in baseball and in sports for a long time, and I'm not sad to see him go.
I am going to miss him jacking up every single home run call. That's a Stantonian blast. And it's like at the warning track. And Susan's like, Jesus, John, like it was caught. Deep from the rail. He's like, oh shit, how did I miss that one? Well, yeah, John, because you suck. That's the problem.
Father Time is undefeated when it comes to any job. But it was pretty obvious that it was time for John Sterling to go.
Yeah.
Again, not sad on this show to see him go. Wish him well. Good luck in your future endeavors, but baseball isn't going to miss you. And while the Yankees fans might, the rest of us are not going to lose. The rest of
baseball will not.
Yeah, the rest of baseball is not going to lose an ounce of sleep over not having to hear the anymore.
Yeah, God. Oh. I just like twitching, man.
Surprised that it was effective immediately. I kind of suspect that. I mean, I don't know John Sterling personally, but it seems like it'd be something that the Yankees would do for them to have dragged this out and kind of made it like the farewell tour. I'm surprised that didn't happen. So good for John if he was the one who stepped up and said, I don't want all the pomps, or like, this is it.
Yeah.
It's done. I don't want it. Like, I respect him for that, because they could have easily dragged this out and turned it into a dog and pony show, and like I said, I wouldn't put it past the Yankees to do something like that. So, you know, good on him if that's what happened in this case.
Yes. And again, we wish no ill will. By God, we suck as human beings. We're not that bad, for God's sake. It's like, Jesus.
No. It's just as baseball fans and anti-Yankees fans, like, it's just not a sad day. It's
honestly, I could be a Yankee fan and I would still hate him. It's him, the way he does it. Like that.
Well, I was going to say, quite honestly, the couple Yankees fans that I know outside of trying to needle me will tell you, off the record that, it's time for him to hang him up. And it's been a while now that they were ready to move on from John Sterling as far as being the everyday play-by-play guy, because he's just old.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, okay. What are your thoughts on Michael Kay? I like Michael Kay. I don't think he's that bad at all. Like, I could watch a Yankee game with him calling it and be perfectly fine. Like, that's – but
well, watching a Yankee game is your first mistake, unless forced to –
hypothetical, damn it. Like, dude, Jesus. I'm actually watching right now. They're losing right now to the Jays.
I don't even hypothetically watch the Yankees play baseball. So, unless the Braves are involved or unless there's – playoff implications. There's no eyeballs for me. But that being said, I guess gun to my head between the two of them, Michael Kay is the lesser of two evils. But I mean, that's not saying much because I can't stand him either.
You can't. The worst part is you can't even remotely, like, say shit positive to him. Like, that's the funniest part about it. I love it.
And Michael Kay is usually these days paired up with A-Rod, which makes it 10 times worse.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'll give you that.
Which I don't, that's not on the official Yankees broadcast, right? Like, that's just for the ESPN broadcast. A-Rod isn't on, like, the Yankees broadcast.
No, because I want to say, well, Paul O'Neill's on there. I think David Cone's on there as well.
Okay, yeah, so it's not, but it doesn't matter. Yankees
you ain't broadcast watching this, who cares?
Don't give a fuck.
Fair enough. I mean, I you know, trying to throw hypotheticals in here to try and make, you know, make it a little easier for us here, and you just shit right all over all of it. Like, it was nothing. I'm impressed. I'm not impressed. It's normal.
I'm going to go Chris with it. I'd rather punch myself in the face than watch.
I was going to say something a lot worse, but I was like, I'm not even.
Yankees broadcast. No thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm watching. See, the funny thing is I'm watching the Jays game right now. But what am I watching? I'm watching Sportsnet. I'm going to listen to a professional announcer and not the Yankees broadcast. Because Dan Schulman is hands down one of the top in the game, period.
As any self-respecting baseball fan would do if they are forced to watch the Yankees. The other team's broadcast.
You know what I Jesus Christ, you know what I mean? Like, dude.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with you. Calm down. Damn it.
I'm just saying, like, but at least I'm watching right now. Like I said, Dan Schulman is hands down one of the best in the game.
Sure, but needless to say, nobody will miss the fact that the Yankees broadcast will never be the same. Like, adios, arrivederci, goodbye.
It's going to be better. That's just what it's going to be. Like, can't predict baseball, Susan. Yeah, no shit. We can predict you being complete ass on the broadcast. We can predict that. So, at least there we go. Well, speaking of ass, let's jump into what we saw this past week in Major League Baseball. There were some phenomenal performances, and there were some not-so-phenomenal performances. There were some that were surprising and some that weren't. What really stood out for you before we really get into the games? What stood out, you know, last week in terms of what we saw throughout the league? Like, any team-wise? Now, I mean,
I would say that what stuck out the most would be the Royals and the Brewers. Those two have played really good baseball to start the season. The two teams that we talked about, that we mentioned the Royals and the fact that they may surprise some people because they made some offseason signings and did some things that some of the other teams there in the American League Central didn't do. And then we talked about the Brewers and the fact that we thought they might be a little worse than they've been over the past couple of years because you lose Corbin Burns, you start moving guys. We still don't know how the season might play out and that there could be more guys being dealt. But right now, both the Brewers and the Royals are playing really good baseball. Not teams that I want to see, you know, to pick against on their offense, at least. Both offenses are humming pretty well. And I would say that those two teams have stood out the most to me. Individual performances, we already talked about Bush and Couser, so those and Mason Miller for God's sakes, he's just been a treat. But I think those are the things that have stood out the most team wise, the way that the Royals and Brewers are playing. What about you?
I would say, I mean, I would completely agree with that. And looking at the American League East here, I've got my freaking chart here that I wrote out everything that we saw. In terms of games, but in the AL East, four of the five teams in the American League East took multiple games in their series. Now, granted, the Orioles swept Boston in their series, but the Rays took two or three from Los Angeles, the Angels. The Yankees took two or three from Miami, and the Blue Jays took two or three from Seattle at home. So that's, in a division that is so tight, like we expected. The Yankees currently are sitting at the top of it, 12-4. They end up coming off of, taking 4-6 in their two series. They took 2-3 at Cleveland. The Blue Jays they kept pace. The Blue Jays are in last place in that division at 8-8. They took 2 of 3 from Seattle again and took 2 of 3 from Colorado, both series at home. And the Jays have been offensively been brutal. And that's been stunning. I mean, I shouldn't say stunning, kind of based off the fact they really didn't do much in the offseason. Had they done more and been like this to start off, I guess it would be a little more stunning. But right now, I guess it's disappointing if you're a Jays fan, but you know, taking 4 of 6 in your 2 series is what you have to have. Looking at the Orioles, like I said, they swept Boston, and then they were in that huge matchup against the Milwaukee Brewers, and they lost 2 of 3, which was, you know, that was at home. Milwaukee is, like you said, Scott, has been playing just great baseball in there so far, and like I said, they're leading the National League Central, you know, pretty handily. Like they're looking pretty good, and that's kind of surprising. But for them to go on the road and take 2 of 3 from a solid Baltimore team is, you know, pretty shocking, especially like I said, considering the circumstances on that. But the Red Sox, you know, they're above 500, 9-8. They got swept by Baltimore and then took 2 of 3 from the Angels. So again, crazy to think about. And the Rays are the Rays. So in looking at the American League East, it's, you know, all these teams are holding serve for the most part. And that's a division that literally cannot, you know, these teams can't separate. They all stay jumbled. And it's, again, it shows why there are one of the top divisions in all baseball.
Yeah. Well, my computer froze, so that's fun.
That's cool.
You can hear me, but I'm sure you can't see me because I'm pretty sure my camera froze too. So
yeah, because you know, and I thought that was the problem. That's happening. All right, perfect.
No, I was like, I'll just let Chris keep talking. As long as he keeps talking, we'll be good to go. if I don't say anything, nothing. It'll unfreeze itself.
Hey, yeah, okay. Well, I mean, shit. Do we want to go? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the American League Central. How about that?
I was just going to say, let's keep talking. As long as the thing is, just keep going, man.
Let's keep figuring this out. All righty. We're really screwed once we get through all the divisions in the upcoming series, because if not, oh, man, hopefully you're still good to go. But all right,
as long as it doesn't crap out on the stream, we're good.
Yeah, that could be pretty rough. But I mean, hell, what the rate we're going, you never know. I mean, this is episode 6 of the shit show. So there we go. Why not? It's going to the American League Central. Scott, you had mentioned the Kansas City Royals being one of the top teams that we have seen so far. They currently sit second in the American League Central. They are a game behind the Cleveland Guardians. Cleveland took 2 of 3 from the hapless Chicago White Sox in their first series of the week. And then at home, they did lose, like I had previously mentioned, 1 of 3, or they dropped 2 of 3 to the Yankees at home. Like I said, the Guardians sitting in first place, 11-5, with the Royals just a game back. The Royals with a huge 3-game sweep of the Houston Astros at home. Again, that was...
Where the hell did that come from?
I know. I was just going to say that was an eye-opener. It was like, man, oh, wow. And then... only to come back and drop 2 or 3 against the Mets because, you know, why not? Because
baseball.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, nothing. But in all seriousness, that's the beauty of the game of baseball, that it's, you know, we're going to see. I mean, granted, the Astros have not been the best. I mean, they're currently the worst team in the American League West because, again, baseball. They were my pick to – did I say win the World Series? No, I picked the Braves. Yeah, I picked the Braves to win the World Series over – the Houston Astros, and the Astros are kicking me square in the teeth right now as they are sitting dead last in the West at 6-11. So, you know, they go and they get their shit kicked in by the Kansas City Royals, and then Kansas City goes and loses 2 of 3. I mean, again, it's crazy to think about. But the Royals, like you said, Scott, are, you know, with the moves that they have made, have shown why they are one of the fun and top young teams in this game. And they did it, to me, they did it right. And that's why I picked them to win the Central, because I think the moves that they had made to bring in some of the veteran guys to ultimately supplement the young talent that's there, again, like a Bobby Witt Jr., you've got AJ Melendez or MJ Melendez. I mean, you've got guys like that. I mean, and Cole Reagan's at the top of your rotation. I mean, it's literally, it's ridiculous. So That was impressive to see from the Central. But other than that, it wasn't real pretty. Because outside of that, the Tigers, they split a two-game series with the Pirates at home. And then they, you know, in a nice division series against the Minnesota Twins, they dropped 2 of 3. So the Tigers, who, you know, are sitting in third in the Central, they couldn't pull away from the team and the Twins that are just below them. They couldn't get away with them. They end up losing 2 of 3.
Well, and the Tigers are the team that I picked to win that American League Central, and they've looked all over the place so far. Started off, what, 5-0?
Yeah.
Since then, look like they can't hit a baseball. Like, their offense has been horrendous. Pitching still looks solid, but overall, not crazy about my pick after a couple of weeks. they've looked more familiar Tigers than I expected overall.
Well, at least you didn't, like, your World Series pick didn't get murdered like mine did. So, you know, at least you still got some hope. I'm a Caboose in Square Wheels right now.
It's a long season. That's fine. That's not the point.
Right now, it's overreaction in the first 2 weeks is how we're looking at it. So
fair enough.
Yeah. Well, first 3 weeks, actually. Shit. Man. 3 weeks in already. That's crazy how fast it has flown by so far. Man, wow. But yeah, outside of that, I mean, the Central, which we predicted, I mean, and we said it in the season preview, the AL Central really was not a division that was going to be one to really look forward to watching. We had high hopes for
– White Sox have been as horrible as advertised, too. Outside of Garrett Crochet pitching pretty well, there's not much to talk about when it comes to being a White Sox fan right now.
God, it is awful. I mean, they lose 5 of 6 against Cleveland and Cincinnati combined. Like, dude, I mean, in the Red Series just wasn't – I mean, that wasn't even close. It was just – it's crazy. I mean, it sucks to be a White Sox fan. I mean, I feel bad for him because, I mean, there's nothing to look forward to right now. I mean, you would think, you know, you had some chances, you know, early on, I think with the Dylan Cease move, you know, you could have brought in a nice haul of prospects for him early on. They waited, and to me, they didn't get what they could have, you know, from San Diego in that deal. So it's, you know, you got a chance to move some of these guys, and granted, they've seen injuries as well, and I get it. But you know, if you're in the middle of a rebuild like what we're seeing right now from Chicago, you know, sometimes you gotta do what's best for your team and trade some of these guys and bring in solid talent coming back. And they just, to me, you know, they missed out on a huge opportunity to do that and that Dylan Cease deal. And now it's just, I mean.
Well, they signed Tommy Pham to a minor league deal. So, if you want to see at bats taken up by an old guy who doesn't have much of a future for in either the White Sox or the league, then hey, there you go.
There we go. Why not? I mean, what the hell? It's just, it does. Like I said, it sucks. I mean, they're just, you know, they're in rough shape. But in all seriousness, I mean, it's really, this is a, you know, I'll say it's definitely a three-team division. Cleveland, Kansas City, and Detroit. Those three are going to battle it out. I am curious to see, you know, like we said, Cleveland is, you know, they've been impressive so far early on. Obviously, like I said, they're 11-5 right now. They've got they won this morning at Boston, but they've got a four-game series at Boston before coming back home and taking on the Oakland Athletics. So there's 7 games right there that are huge that can really help pad, you know, their standings, I guess, or lead or whatever you want to say. But I really wonder what you're going to see with that Shane Bieber injury as it continues to play out later on in the year, how much that is felt by Cleveland. But as of right now, they ain't feeling it much, and they look pretty good. They're playing some good baseball. Like I said, at 11-5 right now, top of the AL Central. So outside of that, Scott, is there anything you saw in the Central, if you can hear me or see me?
I can't see you, but I can hear you. And no, I mean, okay. You're pretty much, I gotta, we talked a lot about the division preseason and like I said, highlighting what the Royals have done so far and low lighting what the White Sox have done so far. But that pretty much wraps up the Central. It will be interesting to see what Cleveland does, but I think that they've got a really good shot despite the fact that they did lose Bieber, because that division just seems so awful overall.
Now, speaking of awful, the American League West, again, that is a division when your leader, the Texas Rangers, which is not a surprise that Texas is leading the division. That's, you know, they were, I mean, they're the defending World Series champions. And we both picked them to be in the playoffs. I know I did.
Yes.
Okay. I thought you did as well. Okay.
Yeah.
But they're leading the division at 8-8. I mean, that's crazy to me. The Angels are in second place. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim are second place at 7-8. In all seriousness, good for Ron Washington. Absolutely love that guy.
Love it.
Love Ron Washington. I know you do too. But they're in second place. Like I said, it's 7-8. The A's are 7-9 in third place. Mariners are 7-8 as well, sitting in fourth. I don't know how. I have to look up. That's weird. I got to look at why that's same record, two different. Who knows? Shit, who knows? But all it's trying to figure it out. So I give up. But then the Astros, like I said, are 6-11, sitting in last place. Now, we've seen a lot of injuries from the pitching staff in Houston. So, you know, they're fighting it. You know, a pretty big uphill battle, pitching wise. But again, that's the Houston Astros. You know what you're going to get from them. And right now, you know, they go and they split with Texas, lose three. Like I said, they get swept by Kansas City. And then they go on the – or no, then they come back home and take two or three from Texas. There's so much, I want to say, inconsistency in the American League West that it's absurd. There's no – you know – Well, it's inconsistently consistent is really what it comes down to, or consistently consistent is probably the best way to put it. There's just nobody can do really anything. It's, you know, the Rangers, like I said, who lead the division, they take 2-4. They split with Houston. Then they lose 2-3 with Oakland at home. The road and lose, like I said, 2-3 at Houston. So, again, no consistency. The bottom teams are beating on the top teams. The top teams are losing, but they're beating middle grade. It's just, it's messed up. The American League West is a train wreck, but it's so close that it's actually pretty intriguing that a team like the Athletics, who we were all predicting that they were going to be the worst team in baseball, and there they are with the most electric closer and Mason Miller in the game. Like I said, they're in third place. So I have no idea what to make of the American League West. What say you, Scott? And I think we are. There we go. Scott's sitting there. He lost audio. Okay, so it is just me right now. Let me text him real quick and say we are good. It's still going. This is awesome podcasting here. I'll let him know that it's that he's the problem. Okay, there we go. There we are. Well, all right. Let's get back to it until we get Scott coming back here. Let's go to the National League East. National League East is one that it's playing out pretty much like we had thought, outside of the fourth and fifth spots, with the Nationals being in fourth place right now and the Marlins, who have really struggled so far at, I want to say they are, 3-13. They're sitting in fifth. Let's see. Yeah, so Scott should hopefully be on here pretty soon. He's texting me here as we're going back and forth. This has been this is probably the most chalk division what we've seen so far. The Braves, despite the injuries we have seen, you know, from them, they're battling injuries, like I said. A tough uphill battle for them. Without Spencer Strider, the Braves go and they take two of three against the Mets. That was a four-game series. One of those games did get postponed in Atlanta. They take two of three from the Mets, and then they go on the road and take two of three at Miami. So Braves take 4-6 in that. And, that, and again, that's huge two series, division, interdivision series for the Braves, and they come away winning 4-6 games. Now coming up, the Atlanta Braves now have to face the Houston Astros on the road for three, and then they come back home for three against the Texas Rangers. So, again, two series coming up for the Atlanta Braves against teams that they should take care of, and two teams that we had just mentioned that in a division that is, in all seriousness, like I said, it's a train wreck. It is not, you know, it's not been pretty for the American League West. And now here's the chance for the Atlanta Braves to take advantage of that. Hopefully we will see them, you know, take advantage. Like I said, if you're a Braves fan, you've got a limping Houston Astros team. They're playing at home, so you get to go to Houston. I mean, you take two or three there. That's a huge dent into their, you know, into their hopes. And what some people had been saying as a, you know, as a World Series preview, I, for one, said the same thing. That was my World Series prediction. But now it's a huge early season test for both teams. But it's been so inconsistent for the Houston Astros that here's your chance now against the Atlanta Braves, who come in at 9-5, leading the American League or National League East. Here's your chance to make some noise and really do some damage against them and hurt their division chances there. Again, you can't win the division in April, but you can lose it though. Like right now, the, you know, we talk about the Florida Marlins or the Miami Marlins, I should say, 3-13. There's no shot for them to come back and win that division. They're playing for a wild card. So you've got the Marlins drop two or three against the New York Yankees, and then continuously at home drop two or three against Atlanta. So they just can't, I mean, they can't get out of their own way. And it's tough because that was a team that I said was going to be fighting for a wild card spot all season long. Right now, we're not seeing that. It's been a rough go for them. So, you know, what are you going to see from them? But in terms of the way the East is playing out right now, the Phillies are 8-8 and they're in second place. They took two or three against St. Louis, and then they split against Pittsburgh. That's, you know, taking 4-7. Again, in baseball, you win more than you lose in terms of series. You're going to be in really, really good shape, and that's what the Phillies are doing. The Phillies are only a couple games off of the Atlanta Braves in their pace. So that's something to keep an eye on as we are moving forward, is can the Phillies, can they continue this hot streak and continue to take, you know, advantage of who they're playing? Right now, the Phillies have a three-game series at home against the Colorado Rockies. Colorado's atrocious. And then they follow that up with a three-game series at home against...
Holy shit, I made it back in.
Oh! Damn.
Mother of Christ.
Whew. Well, that was
but
bad.
You were saying.
I don't remember. I forget. Honestly, I was rambling. I was talking about the National League East. Well, I went on talking about how big of a gong show that the American League West is. No consistency. It's consistently – Jesus. Now you got me flustered. I can't talk. It's consistently inconsistent with what we've seen from the American League West. Is there anything you want to talk about that? Because it's such a jumbled division that we haven't seen – you know, it's been so crazy.
You said the National League West?
Or no, the American League West.
Oh, the American League West. The thing that stood out the most to me in the American League West is the fact that Seattle can't get their shit together for what – this is like the third year in a row.
Oh, shit, I skipped right over them.
Every year, Seattle, there you go. Look, this is why I'm back. Cincinnati is in Seattle, rather. But Seattle is one of those teams that has been the trendy pick, the darling pick, it seems like, every offseason for the past 3 or 4 years. And every April we're looking up and wondering where the hell are the Mariners and what the hell are they doing? Like, why is it that they can't start even remotely all right, let alone getting off to a fast start? They've struggled the past few years. Here they are again. Julio Rodriguez. I know it's early in the season. I know he can't do a lot alone, but when your superstar gets off to the start that he's gotten off to, this is the kind of results that the pitching staff is doing their part. And I just don't understand why it is that Seattle's offense, no matter what they do, they haven't been able to quite crack the code to figure out how to get this offense going and consistent and starting fast. So I think that's what stuck out the most to me in the West, is that it's another year where Seattle just seemingly spinning in place. And I saw somebody tweet out earlier that, oh, this is pretty much the Mariners' form. They'll toil around. We'll get to about the halfway point. They'll turn it on, start playing amazing ball, and somehow convince everybody that they deserve to be in the playoffs, and then come up just short
by a game.
That's, yeah, like you said, the Mariners' way.
Because why not? But I mean, but in all fairness, like outside of, you know, Luis Castillo hasn't been Luis Castillo that we've expected, you know, and that's, you know, that's taking a huge toll on him. Because when you expect your
Mike,
ace to
Mike,
be...
Mike wants to give you props for holding it down while my computer went tits up, just so you know. So you're getting love in the comment section. So
hey, and we are a tits out kind of brand, so I'll take that. I'll roll with that. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. I'm not going to lie, I was on my heels there for a second because I was like, I can't see him. I have no idea what's going on. I'm like, well, if he's out for the rest of the show, what am I going to do? I'm sitting there trying to figure it out. I'm like, well, all right, here.
But I was scrambling furiously. I'm just sitting there like, well, it'll stop eventually, right? Oh, it stopped spinning. And I moved the mouse. Oh, it's spinning again. And I was so I was terrified to shut down the entire browser because I didn't know if it would shut the stream down. And then finally, everything just clicked off and it just reloaded. I'm like, all right, well, either the show's dead or we're back in business. And somehow it works. So thank you for taking care of that while everything went to shit there for a second.
Well, you know, I've done plenty of shows by myself before, but not ones where she
you started out with somebody else.
Yeah, I've never had a cover for anyone just like that. So I was like, oh boy, okay. So that's how we're gonna roll with it. But no, I'm glad you're back. Thank God, because I was starting to ramble. I was like, oh, man, like I said, I couldn't see shit. I had no idea what was going on. I'm like, I can't see anything. You were texting me, and I was like, this is awesome. But, hey, here we go. So I'm like in the middle of it. I was like, hey, this is great podcasting right here.
I was just going to say.
Your text.
That's what I was thinking the whole time. I was like, way to try to grow an audience, having technical difficulties.
I'm typing it back, and I'm like, yeah, here we go.
Falling apart.
This is awesome. But hey, you know, that's the beauty of live radio there. That's what we're going to say.
Yes.
That's why
we do what we do, for technical glitches and overcoming, just like in baseball.
Exactly. You have to overcome. Overcome and adapt. That's what we do. Suffer, overcome, and recover. That's how we do it. We soar over everything. Got a tattoo that says that, actually. So. Enough of that shit. Let's go to the National League Central. Well, no. I was talking actually about the National League East, because that I was saying that this division is probably the most chalk division we have seen, or that we are seeing so far. Outside of the Nationals and Marlins, kind of, you know, they flip-flop spots. But overall, like I said, it's a pretty chalk division with what we've seen. But I did mention, I was talking about Philadelphia when you came on, that they're only a couple games off of Atlanta. But what we've seen from Philadelphia, taking 2 or 3 from St. Louis, a team that's not very good, splitting with a pretty solid Pittsburgh team, but then what they have coming up, 3 against the hapless Rockies and 3 against the Chicago White Sox. I mean, there's a chance to really, you know, make you pucker as a Braves fan coming up here just after this coming week.
Doesn't take much to make me pucker after Spencer went down. I think that's closed a giant gap that resided in between Atlanta and Philly. And I expect it's going to be much more of a dogfight than we've seen the last couple of years, where Philadelphia kind of does their best Mariners impression. And they start off really slow. Things don't look quite right on offense or pitching. and they kind of just, you know, one's up, one's down, then they switch sides. But I think that this gives them the opportunity to, I guess, keep pace with the Braves is the best way to say it, because Spencer Strider was seemed to be kind of that dividing line and that little edge that when you have one of the top pitchers in the game, that'll help you out if you're any team. But when you're one of the best pitchers or one of the best teams in the league and you add that on, well, when you take that away, it doesn't diminish the fact that the Braves are still in a good spot, should still be able to get into a playoff spot, but it does close that gap with Philadelphia. And I'm a little bit concerned at how things go throughout the rest of the season. But I will say that if the Strider injury was going to happen, it's better to happen now when you can get used to it through the rest of the season. It gives Alex a chance to look at, survey the land, figure out what he's going to do, see what they've got in the minor leagues, see if any of those guys can step up before you go out and you make a move that you hopefully takes you through the playoffs and gets you to where you want to go come the end of the season. But I definitely think that if you're a Philadelphia fan, that hearing the Spencer Strider news again, while I know that those fans are shitheads, I doubt that they're necessarily celebrating the injury. But a little part of you has to think, okay, good, here we go. This is the chance that we need to, you know, probably finish it. Because if you're a Philly fan, you're not worried about the Braves in the playoffs. You've already handled them twice, but it would be nice to maybe win the division and go into the playoffs with the head of steam instead of having to pick things up there in the last month or so and be the ones where the momentum's riding high into the playoffs. So I'm sure that Philadelphia fans are happy with the way things have played out so far, despite the fact that they're still looking up at Atlanta.
I was going to say, because it was a huge – and that was one of the things I had mentioned was with Atlanta – you know, two interdivision, series against the Mets and the Marlins. They took two or three in each one of those. I mean, how huge is that for the Braves to stay on top of that? And that's the thing is with Atlanta is they've got the experience. They are, you know, they're the Atlanta Braves. They've been there, done that. They've got guys that have, you know, that are proven. So that is clutch for the Braves, you know, in and of itself. When they're trying to fight off a Philadelphia team. Like I said, Philadelphia, they've got six games against teams that are, like, I want to say they've got a combined, shit, like seven wins, I think is what it is. Like, I mean, really? Like, I mean, that's huge. But then again, on the flip side of that, Atlanta, they've got three against Houston and three against Texas. Now, before going into that, you know, that's, you know, those look like huge series. Now, they are still huge series, but not as big as we expected before, just based off of what we've seen so far from the American League West. But there's Atlanta's chance to really, you know, kick it into gear and stay, you know, keep it rolling and stay on top. So, you know, with the East, and then you got the Mets who sit in third place. They come, like I said, because baseball, like you had said, you know, they lose two or three against Atlanta, and then they go and take two or three from Kansas City. I mean,
I think you got that flip flop because Atlanta lost two of three to New York. And actually, that was supposed to be a four game series. One of the games got rained out, it would be played in September, but the Mets actually won two out of three in Atlanta. But
you know, I misread good. That as I was writing it down then.
You most certainly did. I mean, I wish that you would have been right. So there's that. But Braves well, actually lost to it. You know, but baseball, again, like we've said so many
times. Yeah, baseball. Yes.
Oh, that's the thing. It's all about who you play and when you play them. So, you know, I know that you're mentioning that the Braves have a chance here to have early season success against teams that are either in the playoffs, in the World Series, or you know, have had that high-level success over the past couple of years. But I don't think it diminishes anything if the Braves are able to take care of business against those teams, despite them starting off a little slower, because we expect them to be there in the end. I still expect Houston and Texas to both have a pretty big say in how the whole thing plays out come the end of the season. So I hope that Atlanta goes into Texas and plays Houston well, and then gets back home and welcomes in the Rangers and plays them well, because you want to win and you want to compete against the teams that you expect to be there in the end, the best. So while I don't like losing to the Mets, it's not that big of a deal because the Mets suck and they're not going to be in there in the end. So there you go.
That is true. I can't argue that one. I simply cannot. But again, the Mets, though, well, apparently they took two or three from Atlanta because I don't know how to read or write. Jesus. But on the flip side of that, though, I mean, the Mets have, you know, they've got a huge two series coming up against Pittsburgh and the Dodgers. So, you know, they, for any hopes there, they can't have two consecutive series coming off of one where you took two or three from Kansas City. And that was a pretty stunning series, if you ask me, based off of the way the teams have started off the season. I mean, you can't afford to go and lose two or three to Pittsburgh and then two or three to the Dodgers. You simply cannot afford to have that happen. And if they do, you know, it could be, like you said, Scott, well, the Mets suck and you're not concerned about them, but that could really, again, you can't win the division in April, but you can lose it. And that's what, you know, that's what you could definitely be seeing with the Mets if they don't pick it up here and build off that momentum from a huge, you know, taking two or three from Kansas City in that series. Like, that's, you know, that's big because Kansas City continues to roll. And right now I want to say they were just beating, they were beating the Twins, I believe so it was, last I saw, but White Sox. Just kidding. Yeah, they're beating the White Sox right now, which apparently is not that hard.
Hard for the course.
Yeah, exactly. but overall, I mean, like outside of the top three, what about, I mean, Nationals and Marlins? I mean, the Marlins are the most surprising team, obviously, in that division based off of what we've seen and what we expected, at least for me, because I picked the Marlins to be fighting for a wild card spot. I didn't expect them to be sitting here at 3-13, getting smoked each and every series.
Yeah, they've had a rough go of it. It hasn't helped that they're pitching. Seemingly every time they get one up, somebody goes down. That hasn't helped. They didn't make very many improvements in the offseason. That offense for that franchise has been pretty terrible for a long time now. They've tried to do things to fix it this offseason. They didn't really do anything overall to fix it, and that's where they've struggled. They've been able to develop some of the pitchers, and we know that pitchers get hurt at a much higher rate than do hitters, and they just haven't been able to develop any hitters in there in Florida. So it's shocking that on the heels of a playoff appearance that they weren't that they aren't able to get off to a much better start and at least somewhat resemble the team that they were last year. But there's still a long way to go, and I could see the Marlins flipping things and getting things squared away. Like, I don't envision them being much worse than the Nationals all season, but again, that's what happens when you sit in the off season and you don't spend money and you got things going on behind the scenes, which we know that the Marlins did when they fired the general manager. So it's up to them to figure it out, but they've got a long way to go to do that. So,
oh yeah, a long, long way to go. So let's move to the NL Central. There was a one big series, one for the Reds and Brewers were the top billing in that series, because again it was an interdivision NL Central battle. Milwaukee takes two of three. It was a four-game series. It was originally scheduled. One game was postponed, rescheduled for later on in the year. I want to say it's like August 20th, I think, or August 30th or something along those lines. So scheduled for later on in the year. But again, that's, you know, huge for the Reds, who sitting in fourth place right now with 9-6. So the Central it's an interesting division. Like I said, Milwaukee, we said it right at the beginning of the show, Milwaukee has played, you know, some great baseball to start off. It's definitely surprising kind of with what we have seen in terms of the moves that were made and the players that were lost. It's like they haven't skipped a beat, and it's crazy. Like I said, they're 10-4 right now. And they had two of the biggest series of the season, and definitely of last week, the two biggest series. And they took 2 of 3 in each one of those. They took 2 of 3 on the road in Cincinnati and followed it up with 2 of 3 at Baltimore. I mean, incredible stuff from Milwaukee, and that's why they are first place in the National League Central at 10 and 4. Impressive stuff. And, you know, again, it's just – it's a team that I didn't think – I figured was going to be looking at fourth place, and now very well – you know, they very well could come back to earth as the season progresses. But right now, they are making me look absolutely ridiculous, and I'm all for it. I'm going to be honest with you. You know, even though, you know, the fact that I'm a Reds fan, it's, you know, good baseball is good baseball. And seeing a team like Milwaukee go into Baltimore, a team that, you know, many had predicted to be in the World Series or some had predicted to even win it, they go in and take 2 of 3 when both teams were, you know, at full health. So that's impressive early on, you know, as we are in the middle of April. Good stuff early on. You know, going to the second place Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, Pittsburgh's not going away. And they are sitting at 11-5 right now. They took in a two-game series with Detroit. They split at home against Detroit. And then they split again on the road in Philadelphia. So that was, you know, two big series against two solid teams and kind of status quo. They, you know, they split both series, stay where they are. It's huge for Pittsburgh. Like I said, early on, you know, we had talked, Scott and I at the beginning that, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, they're ones that can they continue this momentum? Can they stick with it? And can they continue to play like they have been so far? Like, before, I mean, I'm not going to go through each one of them, I guess. It's kind of, you know, I guess we'll touch on them. But, you know, what were your thoughts so far on what we saw in the National League Central and the division that, you know.
Well, Pittsburgh is what stood out to me so far. They played really good ball, and I already mentioned that the Brewers had impressed me the most pretty much over the first couple of weeks out of any team, because I definitely had them taking a step backwards. But I think the entire division in general has played a lot better than I expected. Even the Cardinals, they've looked a lot better. Their starting rotation is still meh, but it's performed all right through the first few games. That offense still has a long way to go. The Reds have looked really solid. Everybody wanting to question Ellie De La Cruz and the strikeout totals and all that stuff. They've been silenced for a little bit. I know I'm in that camp. I was concerned about his ability to cut down on some of the strikeouts and still be able to perform at the level that everybody expects him to perform. And he had a great first couple weeks there. So let's hope that he can keep that thing going. But yeah, I mean, the Central Division for the NL has been much more surprising and interesting than the AL, because the teams have played a lot better from top to bottom in the NL than they have in the AL. So it's probably been the most interesting division top to bottom and out of all of them, just from a expectation and performance standpoint.
And it's almost, I mean, I don't want to say it's, I mean, it's not, I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. Cause I mean, I'm sitting here looking at the standings now. You know, Brewers in first. I mean, Pittsburgh in second. Both teams double-digit wins. The Cubs in third. The Reds in fourth. And the Cardinals in fifth. You know, and looking at – I mean, it's – outside of the Cardinals, again, it's – there's not much that separates these ball clubs. But that's kind of what we were thinking going into the season, though. You know, it's just – this division is so – I think it's very top-heavy. I didn't think, I mean, now I'm thinking about it. I'm looking back. I don't think I said it was going to be too top heavy. I thought it was no. In fact, I'm an idiot. I said it was going to be a 2-horse race between the Reds and Cubs. Now I think about it, and that's not the case at all. It's really 4 teams. I mean, the Cardinals, we all predicted we're going to finish last, and that's what we're seeing right now. The Cardinals are just, they don't scare me one iota. But, you know, Milwaukee to me has been the most surprising, because we saw this from Pittsburgh last year, though. You know, they end up falling off later on, but they start off hot. I mean, so it's kind of like, I guess I'm not too surprised by that. It's just, I mean, even the Reds in fourth place are at 9-6, you know. So, you know, they go and they lose two of three to Milwaukee, and then they go on the road and sweep the, you know, the White Sox for the first time in franchise history, you know, sweeping the White Sox on the road. Like, that's what good ball clubs do, is they go and they make, you know, make things easier for themselves by going out and performing. And that's what Milwaukee did, taking two or three against the Reds and then going on the road and taking two or three against Baltimore. Things that had to be done, they did. But yeah, I think this division overall has been pretty surprising in terms of, I think from what we've seen from Milwaukee, but what's less surprising is what we're seeing out of the National League West. That's almost, outside of the Padres and Diamondbacks, that's pretty much going as chalk as well, with the Dodgers in first place and Padres second, followed by Arizona, and then Giants, who, again, I'm not concerned about them, and then obviously the Rockies. But anything, you know, alert you from what we saw from the West? I mean,
it's the Dodgers and them. That's pretty much it. There's nothing else much to say about the National League West so far. It's gone as predicted.
What about the Dodgers dropping 2-3 against San Diego at home in the weekend? Much from that or no?
I mean, it's just so early, so there's hard to take anything away from it. When you're talking about those two teams that have established themselves, it's a big confidence boost to San Diego, considering that that's who they took aim at last year, was the Dodgers. Came up well short, obviously. We know how the season went for the Padres, and even though the Dodgers lost in the first round of the playoffs, they were much more exciting and did what they were expected to do compared to the Padres, who massively disappointed based on the personnel and everything they had going for them. So I'm sure it's exciting for San Diego fans early on, but there's not much to glean from it in April when you're talking about the Dodgers. As long as the Dodgers don't lose, I don't know, Shohei, Betts, and Freeman all at the same time for an extended period of time, I think the Dodgers are going to be just fine. Yeah, so
I think they're good. I think they're okay. Well, as we're getting ready to wrap this bad boy up, looking ahead, well, we're not going to wrap it up yet because I know you still have one thing you want to touch on, but looking ahead to this coming week, anything in particular stand out for you, or what series are you looking forward to?
Braves and Rangers. I'm very curious to see how the Braves and Rangers play in Atlanta this weekend. I will be watching that with a keen eye. So that's the series that stands out most to me.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. Tigers have four against Texas. Toronto and New York are playing right now. I've got a bunch of them highlighted, but, you know, Mariners have six crucial games, three against the Reds here, and then three at Colorado, so there's their chance to hopefully get it turned around if you're a Mariners fan. The Braves, like I said, I had just previously mentioned, three against Houston, and like you said, three against Texas. That's huge. Other than that, I mean, I think the biggest one of the biggest series is the Brewers and Padres. That's going on now, so that's going to be a fun one to watch these next 3 days. But other than that, it's not really much in terms of, well, we do have the Royals and Baltimore coming up on the weekend, so that'll be a fun series to watch.
Baltimore's been really fun to watch just in general so far. They've come out very fast and very, very fluid.
That is correct. You are spot on that one. Well, we had a lot to talk about, so that was, you know, there was missing a week was kind of tough, but so we end up having a lot to come back from, but I know we do have one segment here left. That is the Brushback segment. As you guys know, that is the segment where one of us is going to discuss something that gets us so mad we want to throw at the other, throw at an opposing batter, and that is Scott's going to take this one away. And what should probably be an epic rant, because he's really good at those. So, Scott, my man,
I don't know if I should take offense to the epic rant jab, but I would say
it wasn't a jab.
Okay, fair
enough.
It was
all respect, man. I respect it. I love it.
Fair enough. The Oakland A's, the situation with the Oakland A's has really got me upset and fed up. The situation has been handled poorly from ownership, John Fisher, from the city of Oakland, and from our commissioner, if we can still call him that, and I guess we still have to for the next 5 years or whatever it is until he decides to retire, Rob Manfred. What a giant shit show. First, the A's are going to negotiate in Oakland for what, the past 30 years, it feels like? It's been at least the last 20 to try to stay in Oakland. That falls through. It's been clear for a long time that that wasn't going to happen. They finally make the deal to go to Las Vegas. Everything looks good. But oh wait, the ownership there in Oakland, they want a little bit more in order to go to the Las Vegas situation. So now all of a sudden they're going to move the team in the short term because they can't come into a long-term agreement for staying in the stadium there in the Coliseum in Oakland. Oakland hell doesn't even really want them anymore. The A's will be playing. That's right. Just the A's, no city involved in Sacramento for the next 3 to 4 years as they prepare for maybe their stadium getting completed in Las Vegas. We don't even know. That's how much of a shit show this is. And I blame all parties involved. But somebody's got to stand up and be the adult in the room. And I'm looking at Rob Manfred, the one who may work for the owners and do their bidding and handle everything. But as a interest in the game of baseball and his job to do what's right and protect the game despite itself. And right now, the owners are sitting on their hands, and I'm sure there's at least a few of them that are wondering what the hell is going on there in Oakland and want them to step in and do something about it. But because the majority of them would rather worry about their own interest and getting stadium funding secured for their next stadium endeavors, they're letting everything in the game. And guys, it's so short-sighted for this fucking to be happening. Baseball is better when all the teams are settled. They're in their correct cities. They have new stadiums. They have everything taken care of. And they're not at odds with the tenants that they're in. The fact that they couldn't come to an agreement in Oakland is sad, especially for a franchise that has a proud history as great as Oakland. World Series titles, classic teams. Yes, even the Bash Brothers, despite how much juice we know that they were on at the time. And it's just pathetic that they couldn't figure it out. And now we have to watch the Oakland Athletics become just the Athletics and play baseball in a minor league stadium. And for what? Because people couldn't come to an agreement? It's pissing me off. And it should piss off everybody that's involved in baseball from the highest levels to the lowest levels. Because it's just not something that happens. This is the type of shit that you would expect to see in Little League Baseball, not Major League Baseball. And now the game can't expand because they can't move to another city. They can't bring in another team to Nashville or wherever it may be until they get this whole Oakland thing figured out. And it's just become this big fucking mess. I'm calling on Rob to do something. I'm calling on the fucking owners that are in there that have spines in that room to stop worrying about your own shit and your own pocketbooks and figure this shit out for the good of the game. You're just coming off the heels of one of your most popular seasons and getting eyeballs back on the game after everything that's happened with the strikes, the holdouts, the lockouts, all that shit. And this is how you choose to fetter that away, just letting it just go by the wayside. Because they can't agree on where the team should play, and because John Fisher doesn't give a shit about baseball, he only cares about his pocketbook. I'm fucking done. Get it figured out, baseball. Get it fucking figured out.
Because baseball.
That's yes, why.
Because baseball. I mean, that's why. I mean, again, like we say, it's Major League Baseball. They simply can't help themselves, and this is just another thing that just adds to it. It's a damn shame. It really is.
And again, it's so short-sighted because the money is there. The money will be there for baseball, but it won't be there or it won't keep coming in if you keep alienating cities and fan bases and the casual fans. Because if you're a casual fan of baseball and you see this shit, who wants to watch it? Who wants to deal with it? It has nothing to do with the actual games being played. It's all political, for lack of a better word.
Exactly. And it's ridiculous. And it's a damn shame because it's hurting everybody else. selfish bullshit is what it is. And it's, again, they simply cannot help themselves. So, but I'm pretty sure I think that's it. I got nothing else. What about you, man? You good?
Yeah, that's enough fired up for 1 week for me.
There we go.
So I'm just glad my computer handled getting back through the rest of the show, because that was kind of a bitch, not going to lie.
Well, yeah, no kidding. So I was going to say, I think that'll wrap it up for this episode here. But I will say, I think, you know, we had done previous segments before with the Tri-State Baseball Report. It's too hard to put it all in this show here. But what I'm thinking about doing is doing a separate podcast, you know, maybe midweek, just audio only, for it to discuss all things local here in the Cincinnati area. So
you're already spinning off on me?
No. It was on Punisher originally. God, man. You're sensitive one.
Already spinning off, dude. Sensitive. I see how it is. I see it how it is.
Well, I simply feel that it's, you know, to benefit the game here in the tri-state area, as opposed to, you know, trying to shove it all into one show, maybe do a separate one, just to, maybe that's all it is. Yeah, I got to give love to everybody else here in the tri-state. That's what it comes down to, man.
Well, you guys be on the lookout for that. We're going to wrap things up here. Thank you guys for joining us. We apologize for taking a week off, but you know, shit happens. It's going to happen. It'll happen again. I can promise you that. That's going to do it for this episode of Backwards K Baseball. Follow us on all your podcasting platforms. Get on Facebook. Show us some love on there. Get on Twitter. Show us some love on there. Instagram. We're everywhere. This has been Backwards K Baseball right here on the Craft Brewed Podcasting Network. Impact Sports Cincinnati's, we see you. Thank you guys for joining us. You've been great. Appreciate you. Have a good night.